Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? That regardless of who wins election, lawmakers cannot pass whatever legislation they like? They find themselves bound by what is popular, or at least their sense of it. They can only act within a narrow set of ideas, and that range is called the Overton Window. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look at issues around the country and talk to the people who change what is politically possible. Now, you're never going to change the world if your project is mismanaged. And since we're talking about tactics that can change what is politically possible today, we're going to talk about project management. And I'm here today with Angela Erickson, the Vice President of Research at the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, who comes recommended for her project management skills. Angela, welcome.
Thanks, James, for having me.
Tell me about your work on home equity theft.
Yeah, so prior to being at FIRE, I was at Pacific Legal Foundation, and when I had started there, there was this attorney, Christina Martin, who had just been starting to take up these cases that we had termed home equity theft. Now, this is sort of the big, when you think about the Overton Window, the naming of what this thing was really important because no one knew that this was, that even existed, right? So in order to shift it, you need to first educate people. And so home equity theft, just for your listeners, if they haven't heard of it, in all states, if you don't take your property taxes, the government can come and foreclose your property in order to recoup the owed property taxes. At that time in 2019, there were about 15 states where not only could they recoup property taxes, but the government and or a private lien holder could keep all of your equity. And so this is what we then termed home equity theft.
As in, they tax you out of your house, and then because you owed $10,000 on your property taxes, then they sell your home for $50,000 and collect the extra $40,000.
Yeah, so in a lot of places, for a lot of people, their home is pretty much their primary source of savings, so it takes away their retirement savings or any nest egg that they have for future generations or if something were to go wrong. So it's a big problem. And so we're talking about something that's maybe not super compelling. Project management doesn't sound super compelling. But when you come in, you have this big picture problem. You know you need to educate the public. There's a bigger strategy at play. So at PLF, it's primarily a law firm. So we're primarily litigating. But even when courts say that something is unconstitutional, they don't strike down laws. You actually have to also bring in legislation to get that previous legislation off the books. And so it's a big strategy. And when you're coming to research, it requires a big research project. It requires quite a bit of project management to make sure that it goes off in a timely manner. And so when I had started at PLF in 2019, this was a project that I really wanted to do. And so by the middle of the year, I decided we're going to figure out the size and scope of this problem in all of the states where it is a problem. So the 15 states at that time. And I know Mackinac has done some large public records projects before, and they are a beast. And so like that alone requires project management just to track what you're doing. And sort of to link it up with the Overton Window.
Let me stop on this one, just because I wanted to elaborate on these public records requests. Every government is out there. Some of them are really helpful with this. Some of them want to fight you. And what they want to fight you on a public records request, they have a lot of options to deny, subvert, or otherwise complicate your ability to get this information. And on something like this, you're asking for some esoteric things where they're going to be distrustful about your motives and your intentions, and what you're doing might disrupt a practice that they want to keep doing, which is to be able to foreclose on these places and collect extra proceeds above the property tax receipt. So it's setting yourself up for a challenging project from the get-go.
Yeah, elaborate a little bit more on that. This is happening at county and municipal levels. And so the smaller the level of government, the smaller the staff, so the less time they have to work on it, but also like the less knowledgeable they are. So when you're asking for something, the people who actually get the requests typically don't know what you're talking about. And you have to do a lot of hand-holding and walking them through it and trying to even figure out how to describe what the documents are that you're you're looking for. And I set out to sort of, what's the smallest thing we can do? To get this done. And so I start big picture. Okay, what states have this problem? Can I get any records at the state level? Not really. Michigan has some, but not really. And then trying to figure out what I needed to get from the various local levels. And as you're thinking about, this is sort of using project management strategically to help shift the Overton window or to work with the Overton window as it's shifting. So as we have litigation, more people are hearing about it. We've got news coverage. We've got interest. Back in the late 2019, we had interest in Arizona to have a bill passed. And so it really, we know that we're working on this big picture project, but it allowed us to say, okay, we know what the steps are to get the data. We didn't have it fully planned out after that because it's hard to do so until you have the data. And so, okay, let's pivot. Let's work really fast to get everything we can in Arizona to support what's going on there because there's an opening, there's an opportunity. And so being mindful of an opportunity when you're working on a big project to be able to pivot your resources to execute quickly on something smaller is really important. And that's really only possible if you know, when you're thinking about project management, the goal isn't the process. It's not the like steps. It's getting all of the thinking on how to execute something out of the way beforehand so that when an opportunity arises or a problem arises, you can pivot quickly and respond to that. And so we were able to do that in Arizona. They did not pass the bill, though.
So the pivot involved then just saying, all right, we have this big project. We've got like this big goal of finding out exactly how much property equity theft is. Here's a unique opportunity in Arizona. Everyone look at Arizona. Let's file this FOIA request there and see if we can't find some examples and data that we can use for this legislative fight.
Yeah. And so we were able to get a report out and we learned. And that was really, it forced us to learn quickly about like a lot of the pitfalls we are going to end up having, collecting the data and then analyzing the data. And then we continued on. And during 2020, we had interest in North Dakota. And so we did the same thing. What was really interesting in North Dakota is that they weren't really practicing home equity theft. What was happening, and you didn't know this without the data. And so it was really helpful for our legislative team. They weren't really practicing it. What was happening is they were foreclosing on homes. They were selling them back to the owners for the amount of unpaid debt for most, about 90% of the time. There were about a dozen cases where they took everything. And so we were able to go in and say,
situation though, like if you had the money to pay off,
it is a strange situation. Why didn't you? So it's sort of like the forcing mechanism. Like we actually now own your home. And so we were able to take that knowledge into the legislature and argue for the change and say, you know, for the most part, you've got these benevolent, treasurers, and they're doing the right thing. There's still about a dozen cases. So we were able to actually use someone's story to talk about what does happen when an entire home is taken and life savings are taken. And really the argument there, unlike pretty much any other place where we're trying to make this change, is that, you know, they're doing the right thing now. Let's just codify it. Let's talk about how they go about, instead of taking the entire equity, how they can return the equity or return the home for just the amount of taxes. And so it was much better than going in and not having that data and then saying, you know, like this is a bad practice. And then the treasurer is saying it doesn't exist.
But it's also a huge benefit. Like it's a huge benefit for the legislative process too, because you're giving them something that says most of our guys are already doing it right. That makes it easy for them to codify practice and saying that it's only a couple of you guys that are doing wrong, instead of saying having an antagonistic relationship with most of your local governments, because a lot of legislators view themselves as the primary spokesman for their local government officials. And if you're saying, hey, your local governments need to change their ways, they're more reluctant to do it, as if in comparison to saying only some of you local government officials are doing this poorly.
Yeah, exactly. And what was really great is because we were able to get out something quickly. This is one of the values of project management is once you have your goals and once you know what you need to do, you can execute fast. And so because we were able to get them something quickly, the primary sponsor of the bill was able to read from our report on the floor, which is, you know, makes me feel good because I know that what I'm doing matters and is useful. And so that was the early stage of just trying to build out this 15-state project. And at some point, we kept doing reports when we had litigation or when we had legislative opportunities. And at some point, we hit, like, critical mass. 50% of the states were done, and I was like, okay, let's get this out the door. And it was, we could feel the momentum on the litigation side. We had taken a case up to the Minnesota Supreme Court. We had won a case in the Michigan Supreme Court. And, you know, there's this momentum. You feel the Overton window changing. So you're ready to, like, let's get this done. And I'm going to plug this in terms of the value of project management. We, about a year out from when we decided we were going to launch the big product, which ended up being a microsite telling everybody about all of the size and scope of home equity theft in each state, the laws, and why it's a problem and the solutions.
The answers so to every question, including how much of a problem is this?
Yes. And so a year out, I started saying, okay, how are we going to get this done? And laying it out in excruciating detail. And then I had a baby. So while I was out on maternity leave, my team was able to execute pretty seamlessly over the course of spring and summer. And that summer, late summer, we actually, PLF filed a petition to the Supreme Court asking them to take our Minnesota case and to hear the case of Geraldine Taylor. And we weren't quite done with the project in August, but they had a lot of stuff that they were able to cite, reflecting that it's not just Geraldine Taylor that this is happening to. Mm-hmm. There are people, other people in Minnesota, other people in Massachusetts, people in New Jersey that this is happening to. And by the time the government had responded to the petition and we got to follow that response, the report was out. And so it was really being able to get it out as quickly as possible so that we can make this big impact at the Supreme Court, be able to cite then that research in our reply to the court and then in our briefing to the court, along with several amicus partners who friends of the court briefs that also went to the Supreme Court in our favor of getting rid of home equity theft. And so without that project management, there's no way that that would have been executed in that time, especially with me having had a baby and being out on maternity leave.
How many people were involved in this project?
So the research piece of it is a team of 5 people. We actually also lost a person during that too, and that did not cause any delays. They went off and did other amazing things. So the team putting the research data content together was that we had 3 attorneys working on that space, and those folks, along with clerks, were doing the legal analysis of the rules in all the states. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have our legislative team over at PLF was also working on content related to the legislative pieces that we wanted. This was really a microsite for legislators having a goal and a vision for research or any sort of project is really important to be able to actually set up a project and manage mm-hmm. it properly. And so the audience for this was legislators because we knew once we got to the court, they were likely to strike it down and then we needed to be, or they were likely to say it was unconstitutional and then we'd have to go into states and get those laws off the books. And so they were very impactful as well as our communications team. And so it was a whole organization effort to get this product out. And that what's really crucial about project management, in my mind, it's not about the process. It's about communicating with the other stakeholders, setting out expectations, coming to agreement on what the thing is that we are doing so that we can get all that thinking out of the way ahead of time and just execute without rabbit holes or delays that take us off track of what we're really trying to do.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about that because, I mean, project management is a thing that you don't really notice unless it's not working well. So what did you need to do to make it work well besides communication, or at least what, when you came up to a snag, how did communications help ensure that the project kept going the way it should?
Yeah. So on the front end, I actually started with an Excel spreadsheet of like the timing of everything. And part of that, and this is when you work at a place long enough, you begin to understand how long certain pieces take for people. So you can sort of map it out. And then it's about getting buy-in and understanding from the people who are involved. And so, you know, there are definitely snags. I mentioned that someone had left during the process. So because we knew exactly what that person was responsible for, it was easy to say, okay, who has the bandwidth to take these tasks on? Or can we bring in external resources? It's easier to problem solve when you know exactly the contours of the problem. And then you can work through the resources that you have and communicate with people to figure out how to solve that problem.
So I wanted to lay out the issue a little bit too, because it's something that we want to do on the show, is that just to look at the bigger picture, which is, here's this practice, think the practice is unconstitutional, your lawyers have been arguing that it's unconstitutional, but you also need some legislation on this issue, which means that you actually have to persuade legislators that they're doing this. On the opposites, and you think you've got a politically viable solution that's well within the Overton window, and you're trying to expand the range of the viability of that by demonstrating that it's a real problem and here's what you need to do to fix it. On the opposite side of that, you've got your local governments who are politically powerful in your legislature. Again, like every legislator seems like they are a spokesman for the constituents they represent, including the stakeholder governments that are in their district. And I assume most of these treasurers want, or these local government officials want, to keep that equity that they get through this process. Is that the only opposition you saw?
So it depended by state. This was the tricky part about this project, is that every state had different rules. So even like the public records were going to look different. The rules are different. So what you're fighting is different. So in some states, it's the treasurers who are benefiting. In some states, I mean, it's just inertia. They don't want to change the practices that they're already doing. They don't want to have to train the treasurers and change their paperwork. And so, like, there's just a lot of that inertia and not wanting to change what they already know how to do. In some states, the treasurers, what's happening is they're selling liens to third-party folks, private mm-hmm. entities, that are then the entity that's foreclosing on the home. And so in those states, you're actually fighting the lien holders. And we had sort of a mixed relationship with lien holders. So some lien hold, there was a lien holder association who's typically opposed to home equity theft. They operate in many states and they have members in many states. And so it doesn't operate everywhere. So they're more willing to be opposed to it. But not as vocal, because they represent many lien holders. In one state, there was pretty much just one lien holding operation, and that was in Massachusetts, and they had a lot of political power and were earning a lot off of this. And so it was really hard to get change in Massachusetts because of that. And so the opposition typically ranged in that it was either private lien holders who were benefiting from it, treasurers who were benefiting from it, or just didn't want to have to deal with the changes that would result.
So let's get back to project management. What's some practical advice you can give people about managing projects?
I think the understanding the big picture is primary. You have to have a vision for what the project is. What it is not is just as important, and how it aligns with the strategy of the organization or the activity that you're trying to complete or get done, or the goal that you have, the change that you want to make. Once you have that, it's much easier, and you can't really do it without that vision, it's much easier to figure out the project management. And so doing it as much as possible on the front end, figuring out who's involved, who are the stakeholders, when you know what you are doing and what you are not doing, it's much easier to say, okay, this is when we can get it done by. I'm a big proponent of what's the smallest thing we can do right away so that we can learn as we go. That way you avoid sort of a big painful learning opportunity later on in the process where it's much harder to pivot. So try to get as much learning done as quickly as possible throughout the process.
And in this case, it was getting something useful to bring to the legislative debate about Arizona.
Yeah, so it was actually started with a small blog post. Just how are we going to talk about this issue? Where is it a problem? A report out in Arizona, a report out in North Dakota. So just what is this? What's the sort of smallest chunk that you can get out to begin to test what this is going to look like as you, if it's a big project, as you blow it up into something bigger. It's really important to have the learning done quickly and regularly. And then for me, project management is really about stakeholder management. So it's about making sure that you're involving who needs to be involved at which steps, that you're getting either sign-offs or an acknowledgement that they don't need to sign off on something so that you can keep moving throughout the whole process as quickly as you can, depending on sort of your goals, right? So sometimes the goal isn't speed. Sometimes the goal is thoroughness. And so just knowing what those goals are is helpful to help you design a project that can then go off.
Can you give me an example?
An example of thoroughness.
Oh, well, stakeholder.
Oh, stakeholder management. So in the sort of classical liberal world, people like to talk a lot about decision rights. And what's interesting about decision rights in an organization is they're very like narrow. So at PLF, there's someone who has a decision right over brand. But then we have decision rights as researchers over our content. And so how do those intertwine and making sure that people understand that it's not necessarily a finite like yes or no from any given person. It's a lot of open communication and discussing to make sure that it goes off. So we actually had late in the project, right before launch, had a discussion about like a branding issue related to the content on the homepage. And so it was looping the person in who cared about that to previous conversations that happened and learning that, you know, maybe that person should have been in those previous conversations either so that they understood why or so that they could have weighed in at that earlier stage.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Where does project management go wrong?
Oh, it goes wrong all the time. So one, the biggest pitfall that I try to avoid is project management for project management's sake, right? So process for process's sake. It's not there to slow down.
Put the new cover sheet on the TPS report.
It's not there to be bureaucratic, right? We're not trying to run a government here. It's there to make sure that we're communicating clearly with people, that expectations are being set, and that there's a timeline that we're following. So we're trying to be efficient, not inefficient with it. And that's the biggest thing I'm always worried about, is making sure I'm not just doing it for its own sake.
Well, let's talk about this project. What happened with it? You got it to completion. Did the Supreme Court rule
your paper? So we got this project done in November 2022. And our attorney, Christina Martin, was able to argue before the Supreme Court. And they came back with a decision earlier than I was ready for. This is another little project management piece. Late May. So I wasn't expecting a decision until June, but we were trying to get ready with content about it being unconstitutional, like what would happen once the Supreme Court rules. We were pretty confident they were going to say it was unconstitutional, but you never know. Mm-hmm. And so they rule late May that it's unconstitutional, that this, it was a 9-0 decision. Every justice agreed. And so right away, update the microsite, have a note up there that says it's unconstitutional, explain the court's ruling as quickly as we can once their attorneys have read through it. And then actually that's when the fun part happens, right? Just because the Supreme Court says something's unconstitutional doesn't stop it from continuing to happen. Mm-hmm. And so it was really important that we had this product done, because now the legislative team at Pacific Legal Foundation last year has been able to take that product and their own work and share it with legislators in the states that had those laws on the books. And I think in the last year, just I guess mostly this year because of the legislative cycle, they got it taken off the books in a dozen of the states. I think there's DC and Illinois left. So the campaign is almost completely wrapped up because they had easy to access information that they could share with legislators. They could talk about how it's unconstitutional. The Supreme Court just ruled on it. There's this moment in time when you can still talk about it, when it's still relevant right after, right? And so thinking about that Overton window, being ready for it was really important. And now they've taken it and accelerated the change because they had something to use to take into meetings with legislators.
That must feel pretty good.
It is good. I've been at FIRE now for 7 months, so I've been away from PLF most of that time. And every now and again, I go back to the site and I'm like, it's working! It's working.
So tell me about what are some projects that are coming up for you.
So it's fun being at FIRE. We've historically primarily worked on free speech on campus. We've moved to off campus, and anyone who's paying attention to the news knows that free speech is a very hot topic. And so, sometimes you can shift the Overton window in the case of educating the public and making legislative change and litigation and having litigation. But sometimes the Overton window just changes because of news events, right? So, we have this really unique opportunity at FIRE right now because of events that didn't even happen here in the U.S. Starting on October 7th with the conflict in Israel-Palestine. And that has led to a lot of frustration on campuses. We saw a lot of events take place in the spring with encampments and counter-protesters and marches. We're expecting to continue to see that this fall. And so it's a really important window for us, a really important opportunity for us as an organization to use it to teach the public as well as campus communities what is free expression and free speech, what is illiberal protests or civil disobedience that you might end up getting punished for, so that they know those consequences, and then what's straight up violence or property destruction, so that the people who are feeling frustrated know how to better express themselves given what their threshold of or willingness to take consequences is. And then also, I mean, we saw a lot in spring, so educating administrators what they should be doing on these campuses to protect their students, to protect the educational environment, but also for allowing free expression on campus.
To live up to their liberal ideas for these liberal arts colleges.
Yes, and it's been hard for some. We have a college free speech rankings, which just came out a couple of weeks ago. This is its fifth year in the works. And this is a huge project management task, but it's, and this year's bigger because we decided to also do a survey on encampments so that we could respond to how students are actually feeling about what happened on campus, what was happening on campus in the spring. And what's really interesting is we were able to take last year's survey results and map them onto what schools had encampments, what schools had arrests, and our instrument actually is a really good predictor of which schools ended up having encampments and which ones had arrests because they were poor free speech environments.
So what else are you doing on this issue? What is your big project coming up? Or is this too early?
We just launched it, so we're still doing lots of media and additional little pieces on that. We have a faculty survey coming up so we can understand faculty attitudes towards free speech, as well as the ideological diversity, political diversity on campuses of faculty. We are working to expand our work off campus as well, to go with the expansion of the whole organization. And so that's why I've been brought in to the organization. And so I'm working, what does that look like? What sort of skills do we need on our team? How do we work more closely with our litigation team, our legislative team, and our public advocacy team?
That sounds exciting. Angela, good luck on your attempts to shift the Overton window.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.